Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to you all. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gabaza, and for today, we're getting into a conversation, that touches, on South Africa's place in the global economy. We often talk about, attracting foreign investment into South Africa, but for today, we're having a discussion about the reverse of that particular dynamic. When you want to go out and do business, elsewhere in the world, what are some of the issues that people need to grapple with? And specifically, looking at, the Saudi Arabia, market, how can, South African businesses enter that? What are some of the, things people should be thinking about? And, how can we actually, go about, making a success of some of those traverses? For today, we are joined by Leon Ayo, who is the co-founder of Sterling Bell. They specialize in executive search and leadership advisory, for the Middle East and Africa region. Leon, greetings to you today.
Good to join you.
Now, just before you and I started recording, we're sort of joking about this, but maybe you could tell us, where are you joining us from today? Are you local or are you joining us, from the Saudis?
Today, I'm actually joining you from the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands, which is where I keep a place. But I spend the majority of my time based in Riyadh and Dubai, covering the Middle East and Africa region. Having lived and worked in South Africa for many years, I was drawn to the opportunity in Saudi Arabia.
So maybe let's get into some of that aspect. I'm personally yet to go to the Saudi Arabia. But I have been, to some of the neighboring countries in the regions, Qatar as well as Dubai. I've spent a little bit of time there, and you see quite a vibrant community, of expats from South Africa that are doing business there or are employed, in that part of the world. And I've also come to understand that, there's also a burgeoning community, of South Africans. And South African businesses on the Saudi side. Maybe you could characterize for us, what does that situation look like right now?
Yeah, it's actually really interesting that one becomes aware of the strength and depth of the African and specifically South African diaspora. I mean, I'm an Englishman with Nigerian origins that ventured to South Africa 12 years ago to grow a business, to seek an opportunity, and then grew into the continent, seizing all those opportunities that the growth of Africa offered. And again, if one is pioneering and adventurous, there's a lot of benefits of working in Africa. It's not for the faint-hearted. And going up into Uganda, Zambia, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Nigeria, I encountered increasing amounts of Southern Africans. I suppose as the economy started shifting around 2014, 2015, and perhaps the outlook on Africa was not as favorable as it had been, a lot of African headquarters started moving to Dubai to cover the Middle East and Africa region. And in about 2019, I first went to Saudi Arabia and was just really pleasantly surprised by the openness and the optimism that that market offered at the time. We talk about, and I'll pause slightly, but we ventured into Saudi Arabia with Saudi investment about 18 months ago, having flown in and out for 4 or 5 years. But at the time, there were really 5 or 6 big stories in the world, most of which were depressing. There was Brexit. We then quickly moved on to Russia and Ukraine, the terrible situation there, the plight of Palestine and what's going on in Gaza, Taiwan, Brexit, UK elections. And Saudi was one of the good news stories in the world. Vision 2030, the economic and social transformation that the kingdom was leading. And we were drawn to that.
And when you sort of see the development in the region right now, as far as we can see, what are the opportunities right now? Does it also become a place that people can have maybe a regional hub, a regional center, or are there specific types of industries that are more geared towards having a presence in Saudi?
It's a really good question. And what has been driving, what Saudi has been trying to do, they've been very good at outwardly marketing and strategically communicating the opportunities around Vision 2030, which again, Vision 2030 aims to diversify the economy away from oil dependency. And it's creating opportunities in renewable energy, tourism, entertainment, education, healthcare, and technology. And they're actually trying to compete with Dubai. So they're incentivizing companies to set up their regional headquarters for the region to move from Dubai to move to Saudi Arabia. Now, that sounds really attractive. And the Instagram reel that they put out is brilliant, world-class strategic communications. Having done that journey ourselves, I think there's better ways to do that. So from a South African perspective, it's an economy that lends itself to larger businesses looking to grow because the entry requirements are quite capital intensive. And there is quite a lot of bureaucracy, which we can talk about. But what I've seen in South Africa and Dubai is not so much South African firms, but South African individuals thriving. South African, and I will say Zimbabwean as well. I have Zimbabwean colleagues. So people that have learned their trade and been educated in Southern Africa across all social, racial groups, moving to the Middle East and thriving because of the first, the world-class education they've received, but also the resilience they've engendered having to navigate and grow in the Southern African context. So we can talk through the specific sectors of the economy where one can grow into, but there are certain barriers to investment which we can break down. But where I've seen a great opportunity is for individuals to move to that region. And again, whether they want to maintain a home in Southern Africa and fly in, fly out, or whether they want to go there for 2 to 5 years and grow.
It's actually quite interesting, and maybe we could just drill down a little bit on this particular point for individuals themselves that want to maybe venture out. What are some of the career prospects? And I ask that because there tend to be a couple of hubs that people from South Africa tend to go to. Places like London. We've also seen, a big move towards the Netherlands, specifically Amsterdam. I think Singapore is another area that, we've also seen South Africans traversing to, as well as Australia. But when it comes to the Saudi opportunity, interestingly enough, one of my own colleagues who was with us, just last year, took that plunge, to go and start working for an organization in Saudi. So we're certainly seeing some of that movement. So what does the picture, look like? And, maybe you could talk to us about the big things that people would be interested in, ability to get visas, taxes, pay levels, all of that.
No, it's a great question and observation. I think that the nexus of my business activity for the last 12 years has really been the triangle between London, come across east to Dubai and Riyadh, and come all the way down south to Joburg and Cape Town. And within that, I've seen South Africans, Southern Africans really thriving. And quite often, I think there are pockets of excellence in South Africa. Everybody knows about the Springboks and the sporting prowess, but they don't necessarily know about the world-class education institutions we have down here. And I know you're a Rhodes alumnus. My colleague is. My son went to Stellenbosch. I've lectured at many of the universities down here in South Africa, and we really produce world-class talent. And I think one of the challenges I found is that world-class talent doesn't necessarily have an abundance of opportunity in South Africa because of the economy and the employment opportunities. So actually, one of our greatest exports to South Africa is talent. And like you say, London has been a destination. Amsterdam has been a destination. The African continent has been a destination, if you look at agriculture, engineering, mining, but increasingly Saudi Arabia. And one of my biggest surprises, this was something that I stumbled across socially. If I just go through some sectors, because of the growth and diversification of the Saudi market, global professional services firms are there. South Africa produces some of the best accountants in the world, some of the most stringent assessment regimes. I'm a professor in practice at the University of Johannesburg, and we produce, I think, more accountants, particularly accountants of color, than any other institution in the continent. And there's a demand for high quality accountants in Saudi Arabia. Historically, they would go to London and the UK to try and get these people. But in London, yes, there's a great education system. But Saudi is still a frontier market where not everything works perfectly. So if you've managed to study, qualify whilst navigating load shedding and other challenges that South Africa throws at us, you're going to find Saudi Arabia a little bit more easy than perhaps somebody coming in from the UK. Schools, because of the growth in the economy there, there's a real demand for international talent to come and drive some of the giga projects, the things such as NEOM, which I'm sure you've seen, the World Expo that's coming up, the FIFA World Cup. We need world-class talent to come and lead these projects alongside world-class Saudis. And world-class talent is mobile, but it's going to go to a destination where it can keep its family safe. And this is one of the challenges from a perception that South Africa has. But Saudi Arabia is very safe. But what is the quality of life and what are the schools like? So there's been a big influx in retail, restoration, tourism, but also schools. So many of the teachers at the international schools are South African. Many of the nurses in the healthcare sector are South African. The engineers and construction managers building the giga projects and mega structures are many South Africans. And a friend of mine, Dr. Martin Davies, who I know from Joburg, he's one of the senior civil servants advising the Royal Commission for Riyadh City. So across this space, and that's government is not a great example, you know, but across healthcare, education, construction, engineering, there's great opportunities for South Africans. The benefits, very high salaries, low tax. The challenges are, I mean, I was just talking to a colleague in Riyadh who's from Pretoria. South Africa is still a beautiful place to live, and Riyadh is got some way to catch up for quality of life.
So from that point of view then, and I like the fact that you've gotten into some of the nitty-gritties of what it means, you know, to live and work there, some of the areas that South Africans and people from the region are doing well in, and you know, some of the tax and career considerations right now. In terms of a path or a channel to a place like Saudi Arabia from this region, what do you find is the most is the way in which most people are going? Is it maybe South African companies that have offices in that part, you know, of the world? I know that in neighboring Dubai, we have the likes of, I think, MTN and MultiChoice that will have their offices. Is that the case for Saudi, or is it more just can I call it a greenfields approach, where you literally just look at whoever is looking for talent in the area?
Madhira, it's a great question. It's one of the reasons we established our business in Riyadh. You know, we didn't move to Riyadh for the quality of life. We were drawn by the vision, the warmth of reception, but also the market opportunity. And essentially, our business is really geared around finding, creating, and developing the talent that will deliver Vision 2030 in Saudi Arabia. And of course, we still work with our clients in South Africa, across the continent, the UK. But this is the market that has the most demand for talent. And why are we there is because there aren't these formal structures yet in place. It's a bit greenfield and ad hoc. So what we want to do is position ourselves as a conduit of talent to the kingdom. Because there are challenges, you know, people do go out there. The work culture is very different. That's one of the biggest surprises. And there's very good reasons for it. It was essentially a closed economy 6, 7 years ago. Women were not in the workplace other than in very specific areas. Women couldn't drive. So obviously now that's changed radically, and the social transformation is tangible and what we would expect. But that means you're going into a workplace that is quite new, and cultural norms, be it from an Islamic perspective, which one can get one's head around very quickly, but more around what we understand as performance and work etiquette. There's a lot of work to be done. So people can land badly. And if you've relocated and you land badly after 4 or 5 weeks, it can be a very expensive exercise. So essentially, we're setting up these channels with our networks in Saudi Arabia to be a funnel of talent into the kingdom, making sure firstly that people are very aware of the challenges, what the learnings are. It's not like living in Joburg or Cape Town or Durban or London. It is very different. But with that, the upside is salary, tax-free, and actually contributing to a vision that is that people believe in. You know, we often see cynical, disenfranchised youth, certainly in my home in the UK, and to some extent in South Africa, not all of the youth is engaged in politics. You very rarely hear anyone speak against or not believe in that vision. And that can be very intoxicating and exciting. That said, the reality of strategy into execution is what the big challenge is. And that can be frustrating in terms of, you know, in South Africa, some people say, "Bura makan plan." We make things work, we get by. There isn't always that sense of can-do resilience in the Saudi market yet, which can be a frustration.
So because of everything that, you know, is going on, you know, in that particular market, and I guess let's just call them the idiosyncrasies, you know, that come with operating there. What is the, obviously, I'm asking a question in which you are going to be biased, but I'm going to ask it anyway. What is the best route? A person who sits and does, I guess, their own research and then, you know, applies for a job, gets an interview, you know, does the whole nine yards and then decides, okay, cool, I'm going to uproot and, you know, goes there. Or someone who engages, you know, a professional firm to sort of handle some of the nuances, you know, around operating in such an environment.
It's a great question, and I really will try not to be biased, because actually, you know, I want to give opportunities to South Africans all around the world, but essentially we are paid by our client to go and find talent specifically. You know, for us, the candidate generation isn't difficult. It's the identification of the opportunity that is the challenge. So what I would advise, and what we do some webinars that are free on this in terms of career management, is around how do you... one of the things I'm very passionate around is, how do you future-proof your business? How do you future-proof your own career? Gone are the days whereby we qualify, you know, you from Rhodes, me from Warwick, we do our MBA, we've got a job for life. We constantly have to reinvent what we do. And I think the average school leaver will have seven careers over the next 20 years, some of which don't even exist yet. So that in mind, I'm very conscious that I'm guiding individuals about how to future-proof themselves. And the best way is always through a personal contact. You know, if you are introduced by somebody that is working at an organization that knows you, that can introduce you and bypass a lot of this process, that is great. But then how do you go, if you don't have that personal connection, how do you go about gaining those personal connections? And there's a lot of research you can do yourself online, but equally 80% of jobs in the job market are not advertised. So how do you get access to that 80% hidden job market? And that is through accessing networks, be it through a chamber of business in Saudi, of which I'm part of, be it through an organization like mine, be it through other networking groups. And again, I do, one of the things we talk about, and I've got a 23-year-old son, the graduate market is not like it used to be. You used to leave university and there'd be hundreds of graduate opportunities one could go into. Since COVID, this world's really been disrupted. We're competing. We're going to have hybrid workers from anywhere in the world working remotely. And in somewhere like Saudi Arabia, you're also dealing with Saudiization, whereas some roles are only for Saudi citizens. They've got their own protection of some of their markets. So how do you navigate that? And I always say time spent in research is seldom wasted. Find the right people, connect with them, get the advice, and you have to drive it yourself. And if you have a proactive network that is working with you, you've got a good chance. Still very difficult. I got a friend I was working with in Uganda. He's working on one of the giga projects in a Red Sea resort. Through his personal connections, it took him 9-12 months to get that opportunity in Jeddah, up on the coast. And again, he landed in country and it was a bit of a culture shock. It took him a while to get used to it. So again, it's not just one thing. It's a multitude of things you can do.
And because people tend to go there for, I guess, from an employment point of view, I know that one of the other things that people would want to know, if you're a corporate, I think it's a much easier question to answer. But for individuals, they would want to know that once they are in a place like Saudi, how easy is it for them to, you know, maybe establish a business, for example?
So actually, Saudi Arabia is a difficult place to establish a business. And this is one of the barriers to investment. So if you are MTN, you know, well, again, STC is the local telecommunications supplier, and there's a lot of it that's government owned. But there is quite a stringent regulatory framework and licensing regime which you have to navigate. So for example, for us to operate there, we needed to go through a licensing process that took about 9 months and cost a significant amount of money. That is a barrier to entry. So as a smaller entrepreneur, again, lessons learned, I wouldn't advise against that. Just go in with eyes open, understand the regulatory framework, the legal framework, the Saudiization requirements, and the capital intensity that you required to sustain your first year in business. The flip side is once you're there as, and this is what I've seen people succeed, they go across on a corporate gig where it's very comfortable, well paid, full relocation, you know, all their expenses, accommodations paid for. And once they're in Saudi, it's actually then quite easy to move within Saudi Arabia because the visa regime, once you're in the country, is quite flexible. But actually getting there and starting up on your own is very difficult and capital intensive. Now they're trying to improve that through the RHQ program, which their Ministry of Investment is advertising. There are companies coming in, but we're talking the likes of Rothschild Bank, huge organizations that are coming in to grow that way. For the SME and the smaller investor, it is harder. That said, there are entrepreneurship visas. And what I would suggest is there are trade delegations that come in, be it from the UK, be it from South Africa, and you can come and spend 2, 3 days in the markets, have a series of events, meet people like myself who can talk you through the reality of the market. So for me, as a small entrepreneur, I do a lot of work and I wouldn't have it as my only market. I think the best way and the opportunities right now for South Africans are in those skilled areas of finance, engineering, healthcare, teaching, where there's a real demand for talent. And South Africans have a very good reputation in the marketplace in terms of surviving and thriving.
All right. Now, before we let you go then, Leon, because of all the, you know, different strategies that people can use to either get there and then, you know, move around, one of the things that I've appreciated about this conversation and your approach is that you're quite candid about the fact that this is not an easy thing. You know, there are a lot of benefits to going, but actually arriving and getting there, you know, is quite a process. So we do appreciate that that level of candor. But outside of that, you know, because you did say that your business has, you know, found you operating, you know, in that triangle between, you know, South Africa, between the Middle East and the UK. From what you can see right now, we keep hearing quite a big narrative about a potential brain drain or the fact that South African professionals, you know, are leaving South Africa. I think it speaks to the point that you made earlier on, you know, about the fact that, you know, sometimes when you create world-class talent, you might not always have the best environment or facilities to make the most of that talent. As you can see right now, is the narrative true? Are professionals from South Africa, you know, really leaving in numbers to that extent?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I've tracked since about 2014. When I first moved to South Africa, in my first iteration, I came over with a global organization. And our mandate then was actually bringing in world-class talent to leading institutions. So you look at, you know, the likes of Woolworths, Pick and Pay, Clicks, Absa, the banks, they'd be welcoming talent from all around the world. You know, I relocated people from Brazil, the UK, the USA, other parts of Africa. The Home Affairs visa regime started to make that very difficult for expats to come in, and it could take 9, 10 months to bring people in. So again, that was a challenge in terms of bringing talent in. And every economy in the world, yes, you need your local talent, but you want to be a magnet for world-class talent so your businesses can evolve and be cutting edge. And this is what Dubai has done very well. And again, it's a small population. There's a hub for talent. This is what the UK's done badly since Brexit. You know, Brexit's unintended consequences. There's been a lot of talent leave the UK because it's hard to be there as a European now. And there are something like, there are 3 million low-skilled jobs, but world-class talent will go to Dubai or Paris or Frankfurt. So how do we make ourselves attractive? So that there is, obviously, we need people to come into those jobs and people need to believe in the future of the country. And I think since the election in South Africa, obviously, this the Rand strength talks to this, but there's more positivity in terms of we thought there was going to be Armageddon, and in fact, we had a GNU that came into place, and everybody seems to be quite calm and mellow, notwithstanding the broader infrastructure, structural challenges that we have. South Africa, there's a semblance of optimism, and I find young talent going into the world is not a bad thing. You know, in the UK, something we all did when we left school, we went and did a gap year, we traveled, we got experience, and then we came back. I think a lot of South Africans go to London for 4 or 5 years, Holland, Dubai, Saudi, but life is still okay. We've got an unfortunate majority of people that live under the poverty line and don't live well enough. that is a problem that we need to address. But the percentage of South Africans that have good education and travel, a lot of them do want to come back because they want to be part of the future of the country. They want to be close to grandparents if they have children. And we still have world-class schools and world-class healthcare, not for everybody, which I always say is a caveat. And again, to digress, one of the challenges we had when I was running the British Chamber of Business in Southern Africa is we have investors come to look at South Africa. And it's a hard country to understand because you take them to Sandton, Cape Town, and Schlanga, and foreign investors think, you know, you're looking at 10% of the South African population as a GDP per capita higher than Vienna. And people are saying, why can't you grow more quickly? And then we hide the fact that 90% of the population has a GDP per capita lower than Bangladesh. So we've got this living cheek by jowl, this kind of Vienna versus Bangladesh, which doesn't make for a cohesive economy that can grow quickly, but it can in pockets. So those are the structural issues South Africa has to address. But for that percentage that are educated and are privileged, yes, they can go away, but they do want to come back. They don't want to stay away forever. And I find once people have traveled, they realize actually South Africa, notwithstanding those challenges, is a really good place to be. And they then want to be part of the solution to grow South Africa. So it's a double-edged sword in that right now there aren't a number of jobs for graduates, so they have to go and get them. But I always said there's a lot of space for entrepreneurs. And I don't think the best entrepreneurs are 19, 20-year-olds. I think they're perhaps people that have been out in the world, worked for somebody else, learned the lessons, made the mistakes, then can come back and contribute to the economy that way. And I feel that is the opportunity for much of the economies in Africa, enabling entrepreneurs, making it easy for them to come back. And then equally, people like myself who are foreigners that love the country and making it easier from a visa regime to invest as well.
All right. So that's where we end off for today's conversation. It has been a really great one just talking to Leon about some of, the aspects of doing business, in Saudi. And, more specifically, how can people get themselves, to a country like that and maybe enjoy some of the opportunities that would be afforded, in a market like that. Also getting into, some of the things that people need to be sitting and thinking about if they want to do well in that environment. And, he was also just giving us some of the realities as well. Not shy to say that there's great opportunity, but, you almost save yourself, if you actually go about just educating yourself about what's going on. But, if you are able to go on the ticket of a large corporate, that's probably, a good way to enter that specific market. And then from there, then looking at, how you then move around. He does say that it's, relatively easy to move around once you're in there. But getting in there is, part of the issue. Also giving some stats, around the fact that he sees people from the region, not only South Africa, but neighboring countries as well, Southern African countries, as being quite well suited, to that particular market and doing well in some of those environments, owing to resilience from this environment, but also at the same time, aspects around, a high class education as well. And it was also great understanding some of the aspects of, once you're there, how easy or hard is it to start a business? And it's, sounding that it's not, but that Saudi as a region and as an area, is on a path where they're trying to completely imagine what the structure of the economy looks like. He pointed to the fact that just a few years ago, women in the country weren't even allowed to drive. But a lot of that has changed because you do have an economy that is trying to become a lot more global, a lot more cosmopolitan. And as such, it means that they are looking for this talent from across the world. And, if you are in this region and want to go to that region, he says that there's a lot of opportunity. So that's been it. We were in conversation, with Leon Ayo, and he is the founder of Sterling Bell. Leon, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much.